Welcome back. So today I've got a very exciting interview for you. I have asked Angelique from the Netherlands, who also runs an holistic health company, to talk with me about how healing changes us.
I had to learn to see certain things. But now that I've learned them, I can't not see it anymore. I don't mind making mistakes. I mind if I don't listen to myself. We need to learn how to rest while we do what we do.
So before, when you were ill, you wanted to go back to your old life. But then when you go through it, you sort of change. And we talk about that exactly. Plus, she also gives some really cool tips that you can implement straight away that will sort of kickstart you into your new life, your healed life. Enjoy.
I'm seeing you like this, princess look. So hi, welcome Angelique. And for everyone here, this is Angelique, and you might not know her because she is not really famous outside of the Netherlands, but she's growing inside of the Netherlands. I mean, not physically, but her fame is spreading. And I met Angelique, I think it was around 6 or maybe almost 7 years ago, when I was stuck with chronic fatigue syndrome myself. And I visit her, and I was very skeptical about the thing that she did. Like, oh, another one of those. But it wasn't expensive. Like, oh, okay, we could actually try. And it did help me. So, Angelique, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good. You triggered me, so that's why I'm a little quiet. You triggered me by saying that I wasn't expensive. So I needed to write it down real quickly so I could like explain why I'm not expensive.
Yeah, that's a good thing. I was almost broke, so you know, I could hardly afford anything at the time, but I could still afford some of the things that you did, and it was worth it. It was worth much more.
Definitely, yes. So the reason I chose to not be expensive is because I feel like a lot of the things you do for your health are extremely expensive. And for me at that moment, it was fine because I had a very good job, so I could afford all those things. But that got me thinking, like, what if you can't afford it? Does that mean if you don't have the money that you can't be healthy? And it seemed so unfair.
Yeah.
And so I decided, like, if I have a company, or I'm going to make a company and I'm going to help people, but I'm going to do it at a low cost. At a low cost so that everybody can afford to be healthy.
Yeah. And how did you arrive at the point that you wanted to start a company?
So I had a burnout. And during that burnout, I was like, people were sending me everywhere, like, go to the physiotherapy, go to the psychosomatic physiotherapy, go to the psychologist, go to the coach, go to the, like, I had to just go everywhere. And everywhere I went, I had the same question, like, why is this happening? What's going on? What does it mean? And nobody could answer me, not doctors, not therapists, not coaches, not psychologists. And at a certain point, because obviously a burnout takes a long time, I was like, why doesn't anyone know exactly what's going on or how to fix this? This is ridiculous. And why do I have to go to 7 different places to get something done? Why can't they just make one place where everything is done all at once and explain to me what's happening? I went to a class, let's just call it a class, a course, orthomolecular, is that the word?
I think so, yeah.
So I did a course at Power Academy, and as I was listening to Mohammed, he was just saying everything that I experienced. So at that moment, I was like, okay, I definitely found out where I have to be. These people know what they're talking about. They know exactly how I feel and everything that I'm experiencing. So I started doing his course. And after that, I started doing a whole bunch of courses just to figure out what I had. And in the end, personally, it still took me 2 years to get back to normal or normal enough. But now if I do it, again, this is 10 years ago, I can just take shortcuts. I can ask the right questions. I can, I know exactly which supplements you do or do not take. And I know how to guide when it comes to the emotional side. I know which thoughts bring you there. And yeah, because now I know shortcuts, so somebody else doesn't have to suffer like I did.
Yeah. And I mean, you're basically summarizing everything, because when I arrived at first at your, what is the praxis? There were these, what was it called? Like electro waves, baths that you put your feet in. You did identify some supplements, but not a lot. Whereas before there were people like advising me hundreds of euros every month for supplements and none of it worked. And I think you just gave me one supplement, which made me feel better, which helped me a little bit. But it wasn't just that, it was also the electrocurrent, and it was the emotions that we dealt with. Like, you were doing everything all at once.
Exactly, because every station is a different profession, and like, you already don't have the energy, and now you have to make 7 appointments to do something that I can do in an hour.
Yeah. So like, I felt seen.
It didn't make sense to me. And also, when it comes to the supplements, I kind of like, it got into my head. And every time I would go to a class, I would say like, okay, but what's behind that? And what's behind that? And why is that happening? And why does the body do that? And I noticed that the supplements that they were teaching me to use would do like the symptoms. But I didn't care about the symptoms. I wanted to know, where does it come from? Which system does this come from? And how does this system work? And how are the interactions between the systems? And so I got so deep into that. It's called epigenetics. That's a good English word. The other one I can't say, but the epigenetics. So really, like, how do your cells function? How do your receptors function? What do they respond to? And how do you fix it so that the systems, because it's not just one thing, it's like one thing, but it works on your immune system, and it works on your fear, and it works on your this, and it works on your that. So if you have one thing that's not working, it's like making all the other systems malfunction. So that's why I don't have to do too many supplements, and I only work with interventions. So I want you to do something, and when you're done, we're going to test it again and see if it did what it did, but also if it affected the other systems.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was really effective. Plus, what was really important was that I felt understood. I felt seen, and I felt that there was someone who was actually knowledgeable without trying to make money, without just do this. This is what I did. Good luck with it. So that really worked for me, and we stayed in contact ever since. And right now we both work as alternative healers in a way, and we contact each other maybe every month or every 2 weeks to talk about the things that we're struggling with or some ideas. And yeah, and I really appreciate that. And I've already been on your podcast twice, so it's about time that you're a guest here on Healing Differently.
Great.
And I think it's also good to say that, like, we work completely differently, but we do respect each other, of course, and we don't say that the other method is not good. But you work with a lot of like supplements, electrocurrents, and oils, and I've had really good experiences with oils. So you really need to know your stuff when you're recommending that, those kind of things. And because I don't know that, I'm not working with any of those things, I really like to just dive in the emotions and the habits and the habits that are also related to the emotions. So that's how we differ.
I think that we do the same thing, but we use different methods. So like the way, like when you, sometimes when you explain to me what you do, it's like, it feels like you just go with your hand and you just go and go to the core of the emotion. I'm more of a drip some oil, you know, release oil and just see what happens and see what the energy does.
Yeah.
I like both of them.
I think so too. Yeah. Yeah. I remember the first time I went to you, the second, the day after, I was like this my entire day, just relaxing, so relaxed. And I laid inside of a hammock without distraction the entire day, and I loved it. Just catching up some sun, had a really good time. And then I think it was a year later, you let me try the Heli. The Heli is an electrocurrent device, which I also have it, but I always pick the wrong program. But you always pick the right program. So you turned me on a program was called for the immune system, and I thought it didn't work. Another of those stupid things. So I went home and I started vomiting, and the next day I was clear in my mind again for the first time in many years, and I could play. Chess, which is actually one of my hobbies, but I was really stupid before because I couldn't concentrate, and suddenly my level was catching up and I felt good again in my mind.
I love the Heli. I really I've seen that thing do so many weird things. Absolutely love it. I'm not selling anyone on anything, but I do recommend everyone should try it at least once, at least like the Inner Peace program. At least that. I was just sitting there like I was like on vacation and like people were talking. I was like,
That's exactly.
I had to put the challenge. I had to stop. I was like, I can't work like this. I'm too relaxed. I need to stop this.
Yeah, and that's exactly how I've been feeling in the past few days. And I was like, should we do this podcast? I'm so relaxed. And that's actually a good bridge to our next subject, the one that we actually want to talk about.
Okay.
How healing changes us. Because I don't think people notice enough. Everyone that comes to me wants to go back to their old lifestyle. I hear things like, I was an Olympic athlete. I was a marathon runner. I was a bodybuilder. I want to go back. Is it possible to do this after that? And sometimes I think like, well, physically it should be possible, but there's no way that you're going to do that after that.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult question. I can only like, if I think about myself, I wouldn't want to go back. Like not for any like particular reason. No, that's not true. A lot of particular reasons, but if I think about the person I was before my burnout, I would say my pink glasses were so thick that I seriously was not seeing anything. And thanks to the burnout, I had to learn how to... Oh, nobody told me this. You just let me sit here with this little...
Oh.
You just let me sit there like a fool.
Didn't see it. I'm a guy.
But the person I was before my burnout, I had to learn to see certain things. But now that I've learned them, I can't not see it anymore.
What are the things you talk about?
Well, like before my burnout, I used to work at the, let's say, for the government. So stuff would happen, such as I would work as a project leader, and I would help families that have problems, and I would help children with problems. Not necessarily me, but that would be my project, and I would have to make sure that everybody was doing their job. Let's keep it easy like that. And at a certain point, I was doing my job so well that somebody came to me and is like, do you realize we get paid by having problems? And I had to think about that. And I was like, but if I'm not solving the problem, I don't want to do this work. But what I'm trying to say is that was the environment that I was in. And right now, and even like right after my burnout, I was like, I do not want to be in that type of environment anymore, even if it means I don't have a fancy job, or even if it means that I don't get to live this exact same lifestyle again. Right now, I would never put myself in that position again. Yeah, I think that's the best way to explain it. So a lot of things, I wouldn't put myself in that position again.
What kind of things? Because people are I
would walk away sooner. I would not put fingers in front of my face. Does that work when I do it in English? Because in the Netherlands, we say don't put fingers in front of your face. This is not translating, is it? But like not ignoring the obvious, not...
The red flags.
The red flags, not ignoring the red flags. And I think before, because society expects you to be a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
No, I wouldn't do it anymore. Like, I don't care what society expects of me. I just don't do it. And I don't care if everybody's walking that way. If I feel that that way is the correct way, I'll be walking that way. And I don't care. I really don't care anymore. And yeah, that's what I mean with I wouldn't go back. But there's a lot of things I wouldn't go back with.
Mm-hmm. And when you do something else as the rest of society, are you afraid of being canceled or losing friends?
No. Should I be? Are you not going to be my friend anymore?
It's
like me.
It's maybe another controversial topic, but in the COVID lockdown, I had a different... I did my thing my way because I looked at health already in a completely different way, and I lost a lot of friends.
You did?
Yeah.
No, but luckily my friends are weird like me.
Yeah,
I must admit, during COVID, I did feel outcasted. That's probably not weird for saying that. I did feel outcasted. So not being able to go to a restaurant, or not being able to go to the swimming lessons of my daughter, or not that I wanted to do it, but just because I can't, that sucked, but I didn't want to do it. But like now that I can't do it. So there were like a couple of things. And I did get to the point that I said, you know what, if this is how they're going to treat me, even though I pay taxes, lots of taxes in this country, I'll just move to another country and like at least be in the sun.
Yeah, like what I did.
Exactly. Like, if you're going to outcast me, well, let me at least be in the sun while I'm being outcasted with a book and, like, just, you know, instead of being locked up in the Netherlands with gray weather. So I even discussed it with the father of my daughter that I do not intend to be treated like this, not for the amount of money that I'm paying in taxes. And he already agreed with me, like, I could leave the country and move somewhere else with her.
Fair point.
Yeah.
So it's like you get a spine, you become yourself, you truly stand in yourself, even though sometimes you might be wrong, but you follow yourself and you have to deal with the consequences.
Yeah, but I'm good with the consequences.
Yeah.
I don't mind making mistakes. I mind if I don't listen to myself.
Yeah. Yeah, and the way that I know, you know, you just see it through, and no matter the outcome, you are very, very kind. But if people, how do I say it? If people are crossing your boundaries, it's a firm no, it's a firm line, and that's it, right?
Not necessarily. I wouldn't say that.
Okay, I'll cut it out.
No. I mean, like, I wouldn't say that, because in some areas, definite, yes. But this last year, I've been, my company grew and I had personnel and everything. And I felt like it was all the boundaries that I've learned were gone. And I started all over again. So I think that maybe I think maybe this is life. You just learn along the way.
Yeah.
And that you should just learn how to learn, but also be comfortable in learning and not arriving.
Yeah. Sounds nice.
Yeah. Went deeper.
Hey, and the thing that we talked about via WhatsApp last week was dealing with people. Especially when people are not healed or haven't really had a chronic problem before, is that they talk a lot for hours and hours and hours. It's just an exchange of words without really listening to each other. And before someone is finished, the next line of words is already ready to be fired at them. And I find it very exhausting. Can't do it anymore. What about you?
Oh, I walk away. If there's no mutual conversation, why would I stay?
Yeah.
And I will just walk away mid-sentence.
Yeah, I love that. I can't do it. I'm too polite for that.
I'm not polite. I'm not polite. No, because it translates to me as disrespect.
Yes.
It translates to me like, if we are having a conversation and you're not listening to what I'm saying, or I'm not listening to what you're saying, why are we talking? So I just get up and leave.
Yeah.
I had it the other day. I was talking to a friend and she just kept going and going and going. And at a certain point, I looked at my phone and it was 2 hours later. And I was like, and then at that moment, I decided, like, I'm not picking up anymore if we are talking about this subject again. Like, I refuse. I love you, but I refuse to talk about this anymore. And I also told her, like, you need a psychologist. You need to start talking to someone, because I can't do this anymore. And to be honest, 2 hours is a lot.
Yeah.
When I look back, I was like, you should not have done this for 2 hours. You should have hung up after 15 minutes.
Yeah.
I could have been watching Married at First Sight Australia.
I've actually seen that one when I just had chronic fatigue syndrome.
It's fantastic.
I didn't know. I don't really like it that much.
But still, like, the point, you know, you understand the point I'm making. Like,
yes,
I just want to do something that I enjoy.
Yeah, and I really appreciate it about you. And it's pretty difficult in a world like ours.
Is it?
Well, we have so many things that we should, so unspoken rules in our society, expectations, politeness, coping mechanisms that we project on each other, such as pleasing, being kind, not telling the truth.
So now I'm feeling like a weirdo when you say that, because I really don't care.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that.
I really, seriously, don't. You know what I do care about? And that's something I say at least once every day, but probably more, is, does this make me happy?
And if it doesn't?
I don't do it.
And what makes you happy?
I don't need a lot to be happy, but I can definitely feel if something makes me unhappy. And that's why, like, with the example I just gave, if I'm talking about, or if I'm listening for 2 hours to the same story over and over again, it doesn't make me happy. Unfortunately, it took me 2 hours to realize that, but at that moment, I decided, like, I'm never going to do that again. And it could be with any small thing. It could also just be, like, it could be anything. But just ask yourself, does this make me happy? Because it makes you focus on what makes you happy and what can make you happier. But I don't need a lot. I mean, I could just walk upstairs and sit in the sun and be happy. Or maybe read a book and be happy. Why not? Why not be happy when you're reading the book? I don't know. To me, it's just feeling.
Yeah.
I don't need a lot to be happy. I could be happy with a glass of water.
I think that for many people, this is like very weird. Like they're listening and they, because we come from a society where our value is created by what we do and what we achieve. So people think that they can't sit still. They have to be productive. They have to do things. They have to be this, they have to do that. Achieving sports, marathons, for example, in order to be someone, so they become human doings instead of human beings. And I think that healing is the shift from being a human doing to a human being.
Yeah, that's very difficult to digest. No, but like if you're not happy, then what are you doing?
But sometimes people lie to themselves that they're happy. Like the Netherlands is the second happiest country in the world, according to the people that live in it.
That could sometimes be true. I think it's a very stressful country. Sometimes when I'm on vacation, like sometimes people ask me, like, doesn't it bother you to see poor people? And then I look at the person asking me that and I'm like, but what if they're not poor, but they're happy because they're smiling all day? Like oftentimes when you go to very poor neighborhoods when you're on vacation or when you just happen to see it, they look so happy. So I don't feel sorry for them.
Yeah.
I don't. But maybe it's because my parents are from Suriname and they were also grew up poor. So being poor is not something I feel sorry about. Because you can be poor and later in life become rich. My parents did that. I don't know how to explain it, but I don't see that as something that I have to feel sorry for. Maybe they feel sorry for me for having to work all day.
Yeah.
I went to Suriname like in 2023 and my cousin was like, yeah, I don't go on vacation because I already live in a vacation land. People come here to vacation. My life is a vacation. I was like, she got a point.
Yes.
She has a point. I mean, she could just go to the garden and just, you know, pick some food and make fresh soup.
Yeah.
That's a luxury I don't have.
But I mean, like, I think most clients of mine, they come from Canada, the US, especially the coastal regions and Germany. Those are like the three hotspots. And especially Germans, they have this guilt and these coping mechanisms of being productive and doing things, being achieving stuff, and without it, people receive a lot of criticism and they're accused to be lazy and those kind of things. So when they get sick with a chronic fatigue syndrome or a burnout, you can't keep up with your old lifestyle. So you can't run a marathon or you can't work 80 hours a week. And then the feelings that that were underneath all those needs, like feeling unworthy or guilty or ashamed, for example, they come up and then they want to heal to avoid those feelings. That's what I usually feel when people are just coming to me in the first year after their health problem started.
I think that maybe I'm lucky to be in the Netherlands where being weird is not such a problem. if you understand what I mean. Mm-hmm. I do think that if you are in that type of rat race, is it disrespectful if I call it a rat race?
No.
Okay, good, because I don't want to offend people. But I think you just have to, well, you don't have to do anything, but go through the emotions, because you've labeled not doing anything as being lazy, so that, you know, you feel even worse when you can't do those things. You have to rethink how you value yourself. Because in the end, when you die, you're not taking anything with you. A funny anecdote about that. My father, who has passed away in 2021, right before he was dying, he would start seeing things, you know, start seeing people from the other side and everything, which is, I think it's reasonably normal for my culture and at least, and that's Suriname culture. And so he would ask them questions and they would answer like how it is to be on the other side. And then he would ask like one of his cousins that was a psychologist or, I don't know, a lawyer, whatever, like, oh, well, what type of work do you do there? And his cousin would tell him like, oh, no, we don't work here. And he said, but why did you get all those diplomas? Like, what, like, I don't get it. Like, what, you die and you just never work again? And so he was telling us these stories. And I was like, but Dad, what did you think? You like, would you like to be buried with your diplomas and like start teaching in heaven? it's over. You don't do anything with it. And he was so angry. He was so angry about that. And like, he didn't realize that it stops. It ends. You don't work on the other side. You don't take it with you. You don't bring your house. You don't bring your diplomas. You don't bring your money. And maybe having lost both my parents, but even like I was 25 when I lost my mother, it just made me realize very young, like, hey, shit. And then you die. And, you know, live and enjoy your life. Don't stack up money for some day, because that day might not even come. I mean, y'all should save money. Don't get me wrong, but don't make it a goal that's so far ahead of you, and then like you're just chasing the goal, and like just forget to live along the way. Ask yourself, what makes me happy? What do I think is important? Not what the society think is important, but what makes me feel happy, and what do I value? Because if you don't do that, by the time you arrive at your deathbed, you'll be duped. You'll be like, damn it, I didn't even spend my time the way I wanted to spend it. Or I was always working and I didn't spend time on my children or on the things that I think are important, or I wanted to learn to play the violin. Whatever. I don't know. I don't know what people want. But because my mom died early, but my mom was always very serious about this. She would always emphasize like, go and enjoy your life. Like, I don't know, I've always had that, like, enjoy your life, because it could be over any moment. And I think my dad realized that a lot later than my mom.
Wow, yeah, that's really powerful. We do that. We have in the program, we have like a guided session that people have to adjust for themselves, and which they can experience a visualization of their worst case scenario. And in the worst case scenario, people die in the most horrible way possible, you know, like alone in an apartment. No one sees you, no one notices that you're dead. And it's pretty liberating. Like, people, they get lots of symptoms because their mind is going to protect them against these terrible fears. But at a certain point, after you've felt it through, the fear is gone. And then that visualization of dying that way helps them to become alive.
Yeah, I get that, because, I mean, we're all going to die.
Yeah.
It's like the best title. This healer has an important message. We're all going to die.
We are all going to die. So enjoy the ride. You know, sit, walk outside, like after this podcast or during this podcast, walk outside, feel the sunshine. I hope the sun's shining wherever you're listening, or look at the stars or feel the rain and just be happy with that at that moment.
Yeah.
Okay, I sound many really, people... really like floaty. Is that the word? I sound really weird, but I do seriously mean it.
Yeah. And many people, they learn via a chronic illness what it means to be happy. Because they can't do the old shit anymore. They have to change. And one of the important things that I've noticed is that when you're very, like the way that I was, completely fatigued, you can't do a lot. So you better spend that time that you can do on something that you love doing. And I always got feedback, whether it was the right thing or the wrong thing. Did I stress myself in any kind of way? And if so, then why? And then the new life sort of grew from that place by doing the things that you actually like, things that made you happy. Like being in nature, for me, it's also very simple. I just want to be outside in nature, in the sun. But not the terrible heat that I was in Sardinia. And that's the dog. And and life gets just simple. Hey, another thing that I wanted to talk with you about is the way that a lot of healers work nowadays, or healers, that's the right word, is to make people stressed again. So what we see is that when people start relaxing, their immune system starts working again, and they can become sick or sleepy or very tired or all those kind of things. And in medical science, people then often get like prednisone or a hormonal cream on their skin to solve the problems. And in our alternative healing scene, there are as well lots of stressful visualizations that stop and reject and put people in stress hormones against their current situation and give them some adrenaline and cortisol so that they can function again. And the functioning thing is, of course, like a really, for me, the whole world, the word functioning is a very negative word right now because it tells you a little bit that we should function like we are robots and we're not. And a lot of people, they notice that these types of things, they help in the short run. And then they start doing their old life again, like running marathons, for example. How do you look at this?
We talked about this right before the podcast, and I find it a very difficult subject. Like the first thing I think about is when you're on vacation that you get sick. I find it a very difficult subject because, like, we need to learn how to rest way before we go on vacation or way before anything. Like, we need to learn how to rest on a daily basis. Not even on a daily basis. We need to learn how to rest while we do what we do. And learn not to get that body all the way up there. So even though right now I'm working and I'm, you know, working, I'm doing a podcast with you, while I'm doing that, I'm still trying to relax and I'm still trying to consciously be in this moment and just take rest. To be honest, I haven't really heard about doctors keeping the adrenaline high. I haven't really heard about that. But then again, I also don't listen to those things. I don't listen to the news. I don't. So I find it hard to answer that question.
All right. Yeah. Well, I thought it would fit in the topic very well, because most people that come to me, they want to function, they want to go back. And then they see these pictures of someone who did that And only 4 months later, that person is running a marathon. It seems like, wow, it's possible. I can do this. So what I noticed is that now that I've gone through this healing process, and I don't think that healing ever ends, but I've gone through quite a big step already, is that I'm no longer the old person that wants to achieve all those things. And the things that I was interested in 10 years ago, they don't interest me. They don't interest me anymore. The things that I believed 10 years ago, I don't believe them anymore. Like, you become someone completely different.
Yeah. I do think that there's definitely a message your body is trying to give you. If you don't hear the message, like, the complaint won't go anywhere. But I also admit that it can be very hard to hear the message. Like, acknowledge.
Yeah.
I acknowledge that it's also very hard to hear the message. When you do this work, the work that we do, it becomes easier. You know, today I had somebody that had a UTI. You know what it is?
Urinary tract
infection.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's easier to say UTI. She came back, but usually a UTI is just one treatment. And she came back and I said, did you pay any attention to the emotional side of a UTI? No, I didn't do that. So I was like, okay, then we're going to do that today. Obviously, I used oil because I'm the oil lady, but I used present time and oil to put her in the present moment. And I put it on her, she put it on her third eye. But that was just to get her into this moment so that she could start feeling what's going on in her body. Because she should have been finished with the treatment after one time, but she paid no attention to the message of her body. And so she had to come back and I had to put her in her body so that she would understand, like, what is it trying to communicate? Perhaps, what are you afraid of?
And what was it? Was it an emotion?
I don't know. I don't know, because the only thing I did today was put her in her body. It was today, so I still have to wait for the answer. Sorry, I should have maybe picked an example with an ending.
To reconnect her with her body is a better word than to put her in her body.
The thing is, I'm really good at English, but when it's about my job,
What I noticed that with UTIs is that, emotions, they attach themselves to the organs when they're ready to be processed. And when I think about the bladder, and I'm not 100% certain this is true what I'm telling,
mm-hmm.
but I'm almost at 80%. So that's good enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about the bladder, I think about my dog as well, who's peeing everywhere to make a territory.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have, the feeling that I have is that your territory is disturbed, or someone is invading your territory and you don't have a place where you're safe. So you have to mark your territory. That's the thing that I personally think about UTIs.
I think that it's a personal message, but the point I was trying to make was that you can't ignore it.
Yeah.
So perhaps for one person it's territorial, and for the other it's about fears, or for the other it's stress or anger. Maybe I should have just talked about myself. Like I told you, my ear, that's why I keep doing this. This ear got infected twice. And like I said, what message did I not hear the first time? And I noticed that I would ask my personnel to do something and sometimes it would just blatantly be ignored. What am I not facing? What am I not hearing? Well, unfortunately, my ear had to do this and I literally became deaf before I got it. But at that point, and it took 6 weeks to like I'm on week four right now, but it was a 6-week diagnose. But again, I started to think about like, Angelique, what are you not hearing? And when I started listening to how disrespectful certain people were talking to me and how my body was just done with that, I started to like literally appreciate being tired and appreciate my ear. And like oftentimes when something happens, I'm just like, okay, thank you. Thank you for the message. I would appreciate less pus, but thank you for the message. And like seriously start to think about like grab your diary, start thinking, where are you not listening? What's going on? Why is your ear doing this? But instead of being angry or, you know, any type of emotion, it turned completely into gratitude. Like, all right, you want me to listen? I'm going to listen. I'm going to learn this lesson so good that I'm never going to have an ear problem again. And, you know, sometimes you just have to switch it up. Like, okay, I have this complaint, but is there something that I could be grateful about with this complaint? Or is there something I can learn from this complaint? And I know it sounds really weird when you're in pain or when you're tired or when you're whatever, but I do think it's a game changer if you can look at it like that.
Yeah. I like it. Thank you. So to end the podcast, because we've been talking already for a while, is there anything that you have on your mind right now that you think that people should know, especially when they've made it all the way 50 minutes into the podcast? Is there anything else that you would like to share?
Actually, it's not necessarily anything new, but I do encourage people to start asking yourself, does this make me happy? Like if there's one thing that I would like to give the world, it's that is the question I would like for you to ask yourself every day. Like, and it could be something easy, like, would this cup of tea make me happy? Maybe it will. Try it.
And what if nothing makes you happy?
I thought you said it was the end.
Yeah, but I'm like, I have to deal with a lot of people who haven't experienced happiness in years.
Okay. So if you haven't experienced happiness in years, what I would suggest or what I would like to share with those people is there is possibly an endorphin problem. Did I say that right? Endorphin?
Yes.
And endorphins make you experience happiness. So if you are incapable of experiencing happiness, there's probably something going on with your endorphins. And a very simple thing you can do is eat food with, I don't know how to say this in English, I don't know. Epigenina.
I've never heard of it.
Epigenina. I'm sorry. I don't know how to say it.
In what foods?
Yes, thank you. That is actually why at a certain point it was so popular to drink the celery juice. You know, those sticks. And then yes. You use them. Because there's a lot of that thing that makes you happy in there. That's the endorphins. I'm just gonna call it endorphins, even though it's not true. Celery, parsley, but that's the simplest way and the fastest way that I can give to you of how to restore that. And not only does it restore your endorphins and with that all the other things that could make you happy, also saffron tea. Just put 5, you know, stickies of saffron in a tea, in a hot cup of hot water with, that also helps a lot with those receptors, you know, because that's my job. So that's why, like, I fall back on that. Try to, like, up your endorphins. And then it'll be easier and easier. And perhaps not eat food like junk food and too much sugars and things that make that break it, that break your endorphins. That's the easiest way for me to explain it. Like some saffron, some celery juice, but seriously, daily. Do that daily, and then you'll see after 4 to 6 weeks, you'll be starting to feel better again. And then build up the happiness. Like, go sit in the sun, or go look at the light, or like look at children playing, and just try to feel the happiness again.
Yeah, they have to stop. They also have to stop stressful behavior then.
There's so much you can do, but like, I could only give one example, but definitely, like, you know, from my profession, stress is just not worth it. If you like realize how badly it damages your body, like if something happens right now, my level of stress is like, I will walk over things just not to be stressed. I just refuse to stress. And I think that, like, you should all try that once. Like, whatever happens, just don't stress. Just like,
do you think that there is a thing as good stress?
Absolutely. I think your body does need stress, but the problem is chronic stress. That's the problem. And I think
what kind of stress does the body need?
What kind of stress? Well, your body does need stress, but you also need to turn it off, or else you'll get complaints such as fears and panic attacks and brain fog and restlessness, and you know that, and it builds up because they're systems and the systems are entangled, so it builds up. And like, literally, when something happens that stressed you, I just want you to like say, I don't have to think about it. Like, I don't have to feel or think anything about the situation. The situation is what it is. And consciously decide not to stress about it. And obviously, there are things that you have to stress about. Like, let's say when my parents were dying. Yeah, you know, that's stress. But then after something is over, or maybe like you stress for an hour and then you're like, okay, well, I've stressed about it and that's enough and I'm going to relax because there's nothing else I can do about the situation.
Mm-hmm.
You got to stop.
Like,
yeah, you
like
have
that.
To stop. Nobody's yes. going to do it for you, and you're ruining your own body.
Stop it.
Yeah.
I once saw a sketch from a doctor who was like, stop it.
Yeah. You have to stop because you're ruining your bodies in ways you cannot even imagine. And it's not worth it.
It's a good way to end the podcast. So for everyone in the Netherlands, they can find you in The Hague. I'll put the link to your website so they can find you. And for everyone who's not in the Netherlands, they can order something online, maybe, right?
No, sorry. I only deliver in the Netherlands and in Belgium.
Okay.
But if you contact me, if you really do want advice or help with restoring the neurotransmitters, perhaps I can help you personally.
All right. Thank you so much, Angelique. It was a pleasure to have you in the podcast. And see you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.